The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From beautiful Merrick, Long Island, New York, this is WGBB Sports Talk New York, 95.9 FM, 1240 AM. I'm your host, Mike Guidone, joined as always by my co-host, the man we call Cappy, Chris Caputo. 516-623-1240 is our number. Again, that's 516-623-1240. We're going to have some open phone lines in the second half hour of the show. We last couple weeks have had a virtual bevy of guests, coaches. We're going to have another coach on to start tonight. But before we get to any of that, Cap, welcome back. And some amazing sports stories today and some amazing shots, and we're going to hit them all.
Well, we wanted March Madness, and I guess we've gotten a little bit of that, especially on the men's side, as tonight we saw Duke go down to UConn in incredible fashion. I'm sure if anybody out there was watching it, you probably screamed as UConn hits a shot. There was a couple of shots from earlier in the tournament where Kentucky had a similar situation. They were able to hit a shot. But it's been a fun time as March Madness brings us about that. And, you know, it's cold weather, but for one day we also did have opening day baseball. That was pretty decent weather. And the Yankees have gotten out to a real hot start playing out in San Francisco. The Mets take 2 out of 3, win the series.
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, we're going to hit a lot on the Mets. And taking 2 out of 3, I mean, should have been 3 out of 3, but why, you know, at this time of year we can't get too upset. But still a couple of things I know you're going to rant about later on. You know, people complaining about getting to and from Citi Field already and all the work around there. What'd you find?
I think that Citi Field is going to be like this for a multitude of years because the projects are not going to end, and this is just going to be aggravation for a lot of people. Yeah. And, you know, you're going to take mass transit. You're still going to hit issues. You're going to drive there. They're going to tell you you can't park in a certain lot. There's a lot of construction going on there, and we'll have to see, you know, what adjustments they make because some of the main parking lots are only for VIP. And then if you have to park far away and you're paying an inordinate amount of money, people are not going to be happy. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting because not to get ahead of ourselves, but, you know, everyone's been screaming for years to develop that site, develop that area. It's finally happening, but it's inconvenient, and it's just going to be that way. Very shortly, we're going to have Seton Hall basketball women's head coach Tony Bazella on. We had him on last year. He was a great guest, class guy. We're going to talk to him about everything basketball from Seton Hall to the women's tournament to the men's tournament to NIL money to all, to even Mets because he's a huge Mets fan. So we're very excited to have him on. You know, Cap, I'll tell you what. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we had Scott Cross on from Troy University for the second year in a row.
Yep.
And within a week, he becomes the Georgia Tech head coach.
Yep.
That's moving on up, and good for him. He deserved it.
Went from Troy University up to Georgia Tech. You know, a lot of these guys that we've had on have made a name for themselves. Obviously, High Point won a game, came close to winning a second one. Coach Klayman.
He was a viral meme for a while with his post game. And good for him.
And he did say a lot of the things that he told us 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And, Mike, that has to do with the fact that it's hard to get games, and it's not just them.
That's right.
And I think that is a bone of contention, but I don't know what the answer is going to be because you can't force people to play people that are so-called mid-majors if you're a high-major team.
Yeah.
And I just think it's just going to come down to they're going to have to take the games they can get. You know, if you're new to Division I, you're probably going to get a game against a high major team. Reason being is you're new to Division I.
Exactly.
But if you're a mid-major and you've established yourself and you can hit threes and you got young kids, well, I don't know if I want to schedule them that year because the only thing that we could do is lose. That would be bad.
Yeah, it's a tough question, and it really – it fascinated me, and that's why we were, you know, lucky enough to talk to each one of those coaches. But right now, we are joined by the head women's basketball coach at Seton Hall University, Coach Tony Bazella. Coach, Mike and Chris here on Long Island. Thanks for joining us tonight.
My favorite spot in the world, Long Island. Mike and Chris, nice to talk to you guys again. And as you guys all know, I grew up in Glen Cove and lived in Center Reach and Dix Hills, and Long Island has still a special place in my heart, so I'm honored and thrilled to be on this ball, and wow, what a game that Duke-UConn game was, wasn't it?
Well, you know what? I was in the car on the way down to the studio. I stayed until about, I guess there was 4 minutes to go, and I listened to it. That's what makes, you know, March basketball probably the best thing there is going. Wouldn't you agree with that?
100%. Yeah. And, you know, the one game, winner-take-it-all format means so much. I mean, you know, when they get to an NBA Game 7, all they talk about is how great it is. Well, we have 6 Game 7s through this whole tournament in order to win it all. So it's really hard. You know, it's a hard tournament to win, and, you know, it's why it's the most exciting sporting event.
Coach, put yourself in that situation where your team's down 19 in the first half. How does a guy like Danny Hurley, and I know it's the men's game, but let's make some comparisons over to your side on the women's side. How does a coach keep his team involved in the game so much that they have a shot with, let's say, 120 to go, down by 4?
I mean, it says a lot about the character of their players, first of all. And you have to have great leadership. And obviously, you know, they have some great, great, you know, basketball players are great college players. And, you know, we get down that, we're not trying to catch up all at once. So, you know, if you're down 19 and there's 20 minutes to go, like we say, let's just win each minute by a point and then we'll win by one. So we just try and break it up, or let's get to the first media down 15 and let's get to the second media down 10.
Chunks.
And break the game into, you know, mini games. Cause, you know, if you're trying to get it all at once, you can't, but, you know, UConn, he's such a great coach, obviously we all know that, but, you know, what he's instilled in their program is still, even as we just finished our 13th year at Seton Hall, we're reestablishing, you know, what we want and what is expected, and even in this world of transfer portals, we're not going to, you know, we didn't do a great job this year, you know, holding everyone to a standard, and we have to get back to that. And at UConn, there ain't no question what the standard is.
Yeah, I was going to mention that to you, Coach. So you go 19-13 this year, 12-8 in the Big East. You know, certainly nothing to shake your head at. But as you're saying, it sounds like you're a little disappointed with, you know, how things shook out. And when you talk about getting back to your baseline of your team, if you can, talk a little bit about, you know, just your season overall and you know, your feelings on moving forward.
And thank you again for letting me share this. You know, we won 19 games, finished third place in the Big East. Lost our first team all conference point guard February 1st to an ACL, and had 8 kids get injured during the games and not be able to finish the game. So, you know, it's been a challenging year. But even through all of that, we had ourselves in position to still get in that large and still finish 15-5 in the league. And I think, you know, that probably could have gotten us right there. And we didn't. We didn't you know, execute properly. Our standards weren't met, starting with the head coach not holding them accountable to the standards that I needed to do. And I was spoiled. 2 years ago, I had Faith Misonis on the team. Mm-hmm. Amari Wright, a fifth-year senior on the team, they ran the team. I mean, this is a compliment. I drove home every day happy. and this year, I drove home every day bewildered.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll take responsibility and accountability. So we had really good kids. They're fine kids, but they needed to be led better, and they needed to understand our standards. So we've already started with that. We usually give them the spring off from workouts. We will be starting workouts tomorrow. We returned 7 of the possible 12 players that could have returned, and we're very excited with that. You know, the kids that, you know, coming back are really committed and are very good players. And then, you know, in this day and age, we also have 5 freshmen coming in, so we have 12 kids already on our team for next year, which is way ahead of most people. Yeah,
yeah.
And 2 of the top 70 players in the country in high school that are coming in, and Shamira and NEA. So we're really excited, one at 6'2", one at 6'3". So we brought in some good size. Our staff did a great job of recruiting them. And I think we learned a valuable lesson. And, you know, listen, we're not trying to rebuild this from 7 wins. We won 19 games, made the postseason again, and finished third place in the Big East. So we just got to raise the base. We have to make sure they all understand the standard, and we have to keep the standard where it was. And we didn't do a great job of that, and we will. So, you know, we're going to be very good next year, and we're excited for that.
Again, we're talking with women's basketball coach at Seton Hall, Tony Bazella. Tony, last year we talked, you told us that you were helping along with some of the rules and regulations, and says this year under the proposals, women's basketball transfer window would open the 6th through the 20th of April, which is much later than it was last year. The current transfer windows allow after the conclusion of the second round of the men's and women's and then stay open for 30 days. And also, I think it says something about if a school announces a new head coach hire, there's a five-day period for the new coaching staff and current players to meet. After that, there's 15 days to notify the school if they're going to enter the transfer portal. You've said that 7 players coming back, 5 new coming in. How do you know that these players are definite to not enter that portal? And what do you think of the new changes?
Well, fantastic questions.
And you had that memorized.
You know, I've tried to, do this. So this transfer portal window is a big thing. And being on the WBCA, we want everyone's opinion. Unfortunately, everyone doesn't want to give their opinion until after the rules are put in place. That's really disappointing. Yeah, it is. And, you know, we have our convention this week, and, you know, I'm speaking at a bunch, and, you know, people are going to get upset with me, but it's true. Everyone deserves an opinion. Everyone deserves the right to say something. Say it before we put the rule into effect, not after. So here's the situation. We had a lot of people that felt it wasn't fair for the teams in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA, the Sweet 16 of the BIT, and the Sweet 16 of the NIT, 48 teams still playing, and then you open the portal window. So what we did was, it was sort of a compromise. Right. We waited to the end and cut it to 15 days. So we're really still ending the portal window earlier than what we ended it last year, by probably 4 or 5 days. My thing, to be blunt, is I want to reduce the portal window to 5 days. All these kids know on the first day of the portal whether they're going in and out. Mm-hmm. It's like NBA free agency, if we all remember. Yeah. Like, or NFL free agency. The first day of free agency, everyone's signing all the contracts. How can that be? Because they were all negotiating before.
It's already happened. Yeah.
That's what's happening now. So we've met with all our players. And basically we said to our players, this is what we can give you. This is what we expect to have coming back in your position. And financially, this is the package we can offer you. We want an answer before the portal opens. Because when the portal opens, now you're at risk just like everyone else. So if you're still thinking of what you're doing when the portal is open, I'm bringing kids in. And they might get better deals. They might, you know, whatever. So we met with everyone. We asked for their word. Now, they can go and change their word, but we don't expect that. We do have a good culture and a due understanding at Seton Hall. And 5 of the kids, whether it's through our choice or their choice, decided to that they want to enter the portal. And 7 of them, through, you know, both our choices, have decided to stay. So at least we have a baseline there and 5 freshmen, so we don't obviously need a lot of kids in the portal. So we're relying on them being honest, but I don't foresee that as an issue right now. And I said to them, there's an advantage to knowing what you're doing before the portal opens. For those of you who are leaving, yes, you can't contact other schools, but once everyone knows you're out there, you can release it through an Instagram story or something. Then, you know, the first day of portals, everyone's allowed to talk. Now, everyone also has representatives, as we know. So those representatives are fishing around and getting what the greatest opportunities are for these kids. So that's 1. 2, getting back to your days. The days are shorter because we started 15 days from the end of April, end of the Final Four. But I want to reduce it to 5 days. We don't need to know who's not on our team or on our team on April, 20th. We need to know as soon as the season ends basically what we have. So maybe April 10th. And that's my next push, to be honest with you, because no one needs 15 days to decide if they're going in the portal. Everyone knows now if they're going in or not. I mean, who are we kidding?
They're not traveling. So basically, Coach, if you have 7 returners and 5 freshmen coming in, you're not going to be hitting this transfer portal is kind of what we're hearing from you.
Oh, we're gonna hit it for 3 kids. We know we need a 4 player. There's no question.
Okay.
To everyone graduating or young kids, we want to bring a 4 player in, and we'd love to bring in one more, you know, ball handling, scoring, wing guard, whatever it may be. And I don't know if we'll finish the 3rd spot or not. It'll depend on who's available and who's not. We definitely want a 4 player. We feel if we get the 4 player that, you know, can contribute right away, then we have a chance to be, you know, top 3 in the league. And we'll get it. I don't know who it is yet, but we'll get it. Our staff does a great job, and last year in the portal, we brought in Mariana Valenzuela, who was a first-team All-Conference player. She was fantastic for us. And we brought in Jordana Cordia, who became a starter and had a good year for us. So we did well in looking at people up front last year, and we'll do the same this year. But what we didn't want to do, I'll just finish, what we didn't want to do is have to go in the portal and need 7 or 8 kids.
Yeah.
That's when you panic, and that's when you don't know what you're doing. So that's why we always bring in 4 to 5 freshmen, so we know we have a base.
That seems just so sound and such the way to go because, as you mentioned, trying to get your philosophy and the baseline, once again, of your program, and if you're doing it with 7, 8 transfers, and it's got to be almost literally impossible.
It is. And, everyone's like, well, you'll never be able to keep 5 freshmen from year to year. And there's no question. We brought 5 in last year, and we kept 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wish we kept all 5, but, the 2 that are leaving are leaving for great kids, just more playing time. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And they'll be able to get even a better opportunity than they got out of high school because they're coming from a Big East program. So they'll benefit from that as well. And then the 3 freshmen that we're keeping, I think, will all, continue to either have contributed or will contribute in a much bigger way next year. So we're really excited with that. I think it's something that we can really, build on and do.
So back in 1992 when you took over at Southampton, if someone had told you what the state of college basketball in terms of portal and NIL, would you have ever believed it or even understood it at that time?
I think both understanding it is one, but believing it, it's different. And, we talk about, you don't want to sound like an old man, you don't want to sound like you're, but listen, I think the kids should be compensated. There's no question about it. My issue is not with the compensation or perception of the portal. The thing that would solve a lot of problems and bring stability to this sport is the one-time transfer rule. You're allowed to transfer one time. After that, you still can get a scholarship, you still can get NIL or health mm-hmm. settlement money. That's fine. But you're going to sit out.
Yeah.
And, that's what we need because it's unlimited free agency every year. That's not fair. And people, again, this is a Jay Billis thing. This is not the same as a coach being able to leave. There's 40 coaches that leave, 20 to 25 by someone else's choice and 15 by their own choice. Really, look it up. There's about 15 coaches that are leaving by their own choice, either going to get another job or retiring. 25 have been fired.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 coaches is not equal to 1,500 basketball players. So you can't say that. Secondly, if I were to leave tomorrow to go anywhere, I would have a large buyout.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are leaving. They should. You want to make it equal? Then give back the $90,000 of scholarship that you just took.
Yeah.
And they were like, no. So what would solve this whole problem? They still get compensated and everything is just a one-time sit-out rule. If you transfer, you could transfer once, no problem. But the second time, you still get a scholarship. You still get your NIL. You still get your house settlement. You get whatever you want. But you're going to sit out, work on your game, work on your academics, and get better.
Coach, we're going to change it up. The women's basketball has gotten called in for some post-game press conferences, including Felicia Leggett-Jack from Syracuse. I'm sure you heard a little bit of what she said. And
I did.
I went back and looked it up. 2019, she was at Buffalo. They were a 7-10 seed. They got sent to the 2-seed UConn, won their first-round game against Rutgers, had to play UConn. 2024, she's at Syracuse. They were actually a six seed. Playing an 11, UConn was a 3, and then this time they were in the 8-9 game and had to play UConn. What's your opinion on whether or not the NCAA is placing her in UConn each year? And do you think she's just trying to lay the groundwork that next year or the year after she doesn't have to go back to UConn?
Yeah, and I know Felicia really well, and that's what she is doing. She's laying that groundwork, which is very smart. I've been in the NCAA tournament 3 times. With LIU, once, went to the UConn Regional, with Seton Hall twice, went to the UConn Regional. So 3 times for me in my, 25 plus years of coaching Division I, we've gone to UConn. It's a different committee each year.
Yeah.
Now, you keep saying people, but what she's trying to do, and I understand it, geographically, they keep sticking her closest to UConn when, and it seems weird because Princeton doesn't get in that bracket and they keep getting shipped. So it's weird. Mm-hmm. So I think she's trying to lay the groundwork, and I understand her frustration. Listen, we play UConn 2 to 3 times a year. It's very frustrating, you know, and she's, you know, and she's trying to, you know, say, listen, we're thankful to be in the tournament. We're thankful to win games, but, you know, it's really difficult. And it is. So I just think there's a little frustration. She's laying a little groundwork. I understand where she's coming from. You know, certainly I've been in the NCAA tournament 3 times, and I've been in the UConn's bracket all 3 times. So, you know, it is frustrating, but, you know, I'll go to UConn's bracket next year if you put me in the tournament. Yeah. I'll be great. If we're good enough to earn a spot, I should say, we'll go to UConn's bracket. You know, I just think you're right, and you're one of the first people that have said it, but you're 100% right. She's just trying to lay the groundwork, that's all.
But, Coach, you're not going to be sent to stores for the first 2 rounds, are you? Because you're in the Big East with them.
No, we couldn't go there because we're in the same league.
Right. But, you know, after that, we have the second problem we can talk about, which is what Coach Auriemma brought up, and that is when you get to these next rounds where you're playing, again, only in 2 sites instead of 4 sites, which some people are upset about, but I think they're going to keep. He's complaining about these rims being a little tight and people are shooting the ball a little bit weak. Do you think that's a problem with some of these sites where maybe they're using brand new rims?
And brand new basketballs.
And
we
new
just
basketballs.
Play in the WBIT. And we're fortunate in the WBIT, you play the, you know, the first 3 rounds at home sites, so you're not going to change the rims or the nets. But they give you all the new basketballs and tell you to play with them. And I'm not going to lie to you, we both teams get to practice with them and shoot around, and we got it and shoot around, and I'm like, this is like, you know, one of those ping balls you used to throw in the air.
Yeah.
And it was, we had to take the air out of all the basketballs.
Wow.
And really try and fight them. And then, you know, our opponent came in FS Missouri, and we were basically like, you guys, you know, really bang these basketballs into the ground. You know, I don't know what, I think this will put an end to it. But, you know, the 2 regional site is not a good thing. And we've just signed on for 5 more years.
No, you didn't.
And we're really disappointed at WBCA that we weren't consulted more, because the 2 regional, first of all, the sites are very difficult to get to most of the time.
Yep.
Secondly, you know, the attendance is horrific.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so bad. And, you know, someone else brought up, Coach Gately brought up, oh, you know, maybe we're at the stage right now where the first 2 rounds can't be at home sites.
Yeah, but no, that's nobody will show up.
Nobody. And again, everyone has to understand this is a business. We're giving out units now. We're paying for everyone's travel. We're doing all these things. We can't continue to hemorrhage money and lose it. You have to have the first 2 rounds at home sites. It's not an option. Like,
right.
You would get nobody at these games.
Right.
If it was that. So, you know, I understand the frustration, but it is a business, and we're fortunate now that we're getting units and we're getting all these things. With that, we have to give in a little, and I think where we're giving in is home sites in the first 2, and I do think we need to go back to 4 regionals, but we're not for a long time because they just signed a 5-year deal.
Yeah, because, you know, Gino's talking about how with 2 regionals, you got to have so many teams at one place. His team had a practice at 6:20 in the morning.
And they had to do another day. They had to do a press conference at 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just not okay.
Well, get you on some of these committees that actually say something before they make decisions, and hopefully the right people will make the right decisions.
We're trying, and I just got put on the board of the WBCA.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you, last spring. So I'm excited for the next few years to help everyone out, coming from low major, mid-major, and then in a major now. I do think I will represent everyone well and stuff. And that is one of the things we're fighting for. We have a great president, Jose Fernandez, and a really good group. Daniel Donahue, our executive director, really understands, you know, the challenges that women's basketball goes through. So she's doing a lot. I think Lynn Holtzman now at the NCAA is much more open. The NCAA is much more open now with Lynn Holtzman to listening to us. So we'll get it fixed. But it's going to take a little while. Like, you know, we're working on a lot of different things to make things better, from the net rankings to the quad rankings. We're going to get all that fixed as well.
Coach, we would be remiss if we didn't congratulate you on achieving your 555th victory as a head coach on the collegiate level. Just speaks to, you know, what you do as a person, as a coach. I mean, that's just that's outstanding achievement. I know you're going to be very humble in how you approach it, but congratulations on that.
I appreciate that. And as you know, I'm being a former coach and everything, or coaching still. It's about the assistants and it's about the players. You have to have great players, and I've had some amazing players and amazing people, and their parents. Had a great group of parents that have really supported us and been there. So, you know, those parents have been great. And then, you know, my staffs have been great, from, you know, my first staff at Southampton to all the sacrifices they made at Iona to sacrifices we made at Seton Hall. I mean, you know, I'm very, very blessed. And I'm lucky. And my administrators, I've only had like four ADs, from Mary Topping at Southampton, John Suarez at LIU, Pat Lyons at Seton Hall, and now Brian Phelps. I've literally only had like four ADs.
That's amazing.
So, like, you know, yeah, you know, G. Marshall was there for a year or two at Iona before I left. He was great too, but like, not many at all. So I think I've had five total ADs. How crazy is that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, I've been lucky.
Well, I learned firsthand when I was at Malloy coaching against you at Southampton what your teams were like, the cohesiveness, and you can tell. You can always tell when you play a team what they're like on and off the court, you know, how they care about each other. That leads to my next question. So at Southampton, you start your first year, 3 wins, and in 2 years you got 17 wins on the board. You go to LIU Brooklyn for 2 years, and you win 34 games, do a great job there. You get to Iona, complete rebuild, 1 win your first year, and then within 3 years you're at 17 wins. What's the special sauce? What's the magic to taking over these programs that are really, you know, struggling or kind of on the brink, and getting them, you know, over the hump to the best they can be? Where do you start when you have these rebuilds?
I think you start with, you know, bringing a staff together that's going to believe in you 100% and believe in the thing, and then setting a standard. And that's why I was disappointed in myself this year. You know, I was so spoiled from the year before with Amari and Faith. They basically ran the team. I didn't have to do that much in terms of upholding a standard. Mm-hmm. It was upheld every single day. And this year I unfairly, you know, let the kids, you know, try and enforce it, and it wasn't fair to them. We didn't have the experienced kids to do it, and that was on me. We had a captain that tried to do it, and she was great, but, you know, that was on me. So basically, I it's funny you say this, and again, you know, we've been friends a long time, and you know how much I respect you. I said to our staff, we had a meeting after the season ended, I go, congratulations to all the brand new coaches here at Seton Hall. They looked at me, I go, we're starting from the beginning again. Mm-hmm. We're starting it from scratch. The standards are, we're going back to how we did this when we played. And they were so excited, and they were so like, yes, mm-hmm. That's how we're going to do it. From, you know, we're going to do individuals again now. We're going to go back to, you know, doing what we used to do. We called night shoot, which we would shoot the night before wherever we were on the road, and we'd go get ice cream and stuff. And we had gotten away from all that. We're like, well, the kids are tired, or it's a new group of kids, and they don't want, no. Yeah. We're going to go back to doing it the same way we built all these programs, and fostering team bonding and team togetherness, and getting to know each other better, and not just allowing certain things to just, you know, be passed by because, oh, you know, it's just a different group, it's a different way of life. No, we're going to get back to doing it the way we did it. And that's why I'm so excited and confident the next year. So as you go in and you rebuild a program, you set the standard. So basically, I told our staff, congratulations. We're the new coaches at Seton Hall. I'm going to start from there. So you led me into what we're doing this year. We're going to get a standard, a base. Everyone's going to understand what we're doing. As a staff, we have to really put in a lot more, you know, focus on just doing things, you know, the right way. Whatever it may be, fixing the chairs after a press conference like I've been watching. Getting back to please, thank you, respect. We're getting back to all of that and enforcing it and really setting it as the standard and not just asking them to set the standard. We have to set the standard. And, we're excited. I feel like I'm the brand new head coach at Seton Hall.
Fantastic.
It's a good start. So, Coach, we got a couple of teams left in the women's bracket. Obviously, you've played one of them in UConn a couple of times, and they're going to face off against either South Carolina or TCU, and UCLA will play either Texas or Michigan. Michigan, their highest ranking ever. Kim Barnes-Arico came from Long Island area, went out there, and has done it there for about 13 years now. Can you give us a feel as to what you think going forward with six teams left?
Kim's done a great job. You know, Adelphi. I've known Kim for a long time. Yeah.
New Jersey
she's
Tech.
Really great. She's done great. And they have a great group of young kids that she was able to keep together, which is very important. You know, they're certainly going to be challenged by Texas, correct?
And, yes.
Here's the thing. If Kim's going to win this game, she's going to have to make 9 to 12 threes, which they're capable of making, mm-hmm. because Texas only averages 4 threes made a game. Kim's got to find a way to combat Texas's pressure defense and inside scoring and the scoring of Booker as well. So how can she do that? Well, her team is capable of making 9 to 12 threes. If they can make 10 and hold Texas to their average of 4, now they have an 18-point advantage, and that might be enough for them to win the game. If they don't win that three-point battle by a lot, they have no chance of winning that at all.
Okay, and you think UConn pulls it out in the end?
I do. Playing against them as often as I do, knowing their program as well as I do, first of all, they're marching out the best player in the country. They might be marching out the second best player in the country,
yeah.
And they're certainly marching out one of the top 10 players in the country in Quiñones. She is a fantastic player, and, you know, coaches told me from last fall when I called them, I said, which one are you freshman on? You vote for freshman of the year. He goes, no, it's not close. Vote for Blanca. I'm like, I don't even really know who she is. He goes, you will. And, you know, he kind of just brought her along slowly, like he did with Sean last year. You know, I mean, you know, Sean didn't explode, really, until the NCAA tournament. You know, now, can they be beat? Yes, because they've been inconsistent shooting the ball. The size of UCLA could give them a problem. The physicalness of Texas could give them a problem. And the athleticism of South Carolina could give them a problem. You know, also, TCU has a great backcourt in their two guards. So, you know, maybe that gives them a problem. I do think UCLA size or the physicalness of Texas, and Texas would have to maybe make 7 or 8 threes in that game. Texas cannot beat them by only making 3 or 4 threes. They just can't. Like, UConn's kind of making more threes. They're just going to do it.
Yeah.
And, I know they only made 4 a couple games ago, but it's very rarely going to happen.
Sure.
So, you know, I think it'll be Connecticut. You know, I'd like to see UCLA a little bit under this pressure and see what happens. You never count out South Carolina. They're athletic. They're tall. You know, they throw in 7, 8, 9 threes. They could beat Connecticut as well.
Sure.
Great breakdown.
Coach, before we let you go, we know you're a big baseball fan, big Met fan. What are you thinking about the Metsies this year?
It's great. I'm so happy you asked me.
Non-basketball question.
And I took a lot of lessons from this. So we won 19 games, finished third. You know, a lot of people would be very thrilled with that. And we're not. It wasn't the way the standard of. So last year the Mets had the best record the first 2 months of the year.
Right.
They had a great start, a horrific finish. Everyone's like, yeah, but they were really good for a while. So let's roll. He's like, no. David Stern's like, I'm not rolling back the same thing that happened. Well, that's us too. How can we sit there and roll back either the same players or the same way I coach the team? That's doing a disservice. Like, you know, the definition of being an idiot is doing the same things wrong over and over again. And I'm not going to do that. And that's what David Stern said. Listen, I love Pete. He was one of my favorite players. No one can complain about how hard Nimmo played. Diaz was an amazing closer. I mean, you know, McNeil was, you know, a gritty, tough guy.
Yeah.
But you gotta make some change. You can't roll back the same group that failed. And I can't roll back the same way I coached. And yes, we didn't fail. A lot of teams would love to finish third. But in my standard and our standard, you know, we did fail. So we have to fix it. And I've said this, if I said it 5 times, guys, I've said it 500 times. I'm following the Met module. Yes, it's sad a couple of our kids left. It's sad that we have to, you know, do things a little differently
mm-hmm.
out of our comfort line. But damn it, we're going to get this right. And you know what? The Mets are going to get this right. Even, you know, just look at, we came back from being down in extra innings. We didn't do that all year last year,
yeah.
or trailing going into the 8th inning. You gotta fix it. You gotta take a chance. And if it doesn't work, do it again. But you can't roll back the same thing that failed. You just can't.
Fantastic stuff. Coach, again, we can't thank you enough for being on. You know, you're a fantastic coach, fantastic guest, but, you know, we consider you a fantastic friend as well. It's been a long time and can always count on you to come on and give us just great stuff and even off the air just for guidance. We really appreciate it. Your new season starts tomorrow with your workouts. You know, you said it's all new. It's all good. I remember that was something you used one time. I don't forget those things and just, you know, continued success and, hope to talk to you soon and enjoy the off season. I know there's really no such thing anymore as an off season, but when you do get a little downtime, and don't have to reflect on everything, just, you know, just know that you are, you're just one of the best out there and we can't thank you enough.
It means a lot to me for our friendship through the years. You do a wonderful job.
Thank you, Coach.
I'd love to have anyone out there in your listening area, fans, coaches that want to come to a workout, and then we have obviously our practices starting in June. Anyone's welcome to come. We'd love to have you. We always buy lunch, and you know, you're welcome to join us, and we'd love to have you. Anyone who wants to come by, just send me an email, and anyone's welcome to practice. And I appreciate all this. Thank you.
Absolutely fantastic. Let's go Seton Hall, and let's go Mets. Have a great rest of the evening, Coach, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Harrison, guys.
Absolutely. Coach Tony Pizzella, once again, just fantastic stuff, and we'll break down what he said in just a little bit, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a little bit more on Sports Talk New York.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our second half hour here on Long Island's WGBB 95.9 FM, 1240 AM. The number, if you would like to call in, talk about anything, talk about what we talked with Coach Pizzella, anything on the sports scene, it's 516-623-1240. Again, that's 516-623-1240. And, Cap, you know, we had a big story here in this area with St. John's. Had a great season. Came so close to upsetting Duke. I mean, it was really such a pick'em game late, and they have nothing to hang their heads about. You know, talk a little bit about your thoughts on St. John's, but also, you know, with Duke being upset today. I know we can talk forever on the perception that Duke gets every call and that they're, you know, the blue bloods and all this other stuff, but let's start with a little St. John's and then get into Duke.
So St. John's goes out and loses a tough game. They lose a 5-point game to Duke in a Sweet 16 game, which, Mike, the ticket prices in D.C. were out of control because you're getting that, plus UConn, Michigan State. People definitely wanted to be there. Heartbreaker. That game was like, you know, one team's up 10, then they're down 10, then they're up 10. And, you know, come down the stretch, it's a close game and a chance for people to win. One of the things that, you know, and most of you at this point already know that Rick Pitino is going to be given a contract that's going to run past the 2030 season, which will put him, you know, close to 80 years old at that point. And I think they're happy with the way St. John's is going. And I think St. John's, with that win, probably, you know, plays UConn another time, and then, you know, you never know what happens.
Sure. But they kind of had their number towards the end of the season.
I still think one of the problems with St. John's was hitting three-pointers. And, you know, they brought some guys in this year, but I didn't think those guys like Sanan, I don't think he did much. It was because they played tough defense.
Right.
Let's be honest. You had a guy by the name of Ejiofor, you know, who brought this team wherever they needed to bring him. He was the heart and soul of this team.
Sure.
And I think they're going to be losing a lot, which means guess where they're going to be hitting? The transfer portal.
Exactly. Kind of reminded me, you know, I'm going way back, but Pitino's first year with the Knicks, you know, he had a lot of talent, but he played pressing basketball. And that was not, you know, in style in the NBA. You know, obviously he had done it in college, but it, even on that level at that point, it messed people up. You can see now so many teams are not used to being picked up full court for the entire game. You know, Nolan Richardson years ago at Arkansas, he used to call it, you know, 40 minutes of hell. And it really is. I mean, that wears you down. You have to be in tremendous shape, number one, to do it. But it, I think almost, you know, maybe Duke today, they were so worn out mentally from that game that they coughed the ball up in some really, I don't want to say easier spots, but with hardly the pressure that they saw before. So kudos to St. John's for what they do.
Yeah, and, you know, that doesn't work at the NBA level. It's a college thing that you can pull off and high school thing that you can pull off and press people and cause turnovers and win games ugly. But I think one of the things that Pitino is getting some criticism about is the fact that the team came back by trying to find spark plugs.
Mm-hmm.
And Zubi Ejiofor, Ian Jackson, Dylan Darling, Bryce Hopkins, you know, even Dylan Mitchell was hitting some shots for them. But, you know, the key there was Ruben Prey came in and scored, you know, hit four threes on 4-for-4 shooting and basically sat the final 20 minutes of an 80-75 loss. I think he came out with like 16:34 to go in the half and didn't go back till 34 seconds. So here's my thing. I understand that coaches have a situation where they want to play certain guys in certain spots. When they get to that, you know, 16:23 mark, they want to take out one of their starters to give them the extra time on the, you know, the having that media timeout and putting them back in at the 14-minute mark really gives them about 9 minutes of seated time, all that stuff. And you're looking at an iPad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you got to look and say, this guy's causing havoc on defense, getting a block, you know, diving after loose balls. He's hit four threes in a situation where normally he wouldn't. Didn't normally play, and I don't have the exact stats, but didn't normally play more than 22 minutes a game, okay? Didn't normally score more than about 6-7 points a game, all right? He's got 12 points. In a game like that, where it's close or your team's falling behind, don't you stick with that spark plug a little bit more? And I think, you know, coaches are going to have their spots.
Right.
But at some point, you got to change it up. Even if that means sitting down, you know, Hopkins for a few extra minutes or playing three bigs and only two guards for a little bit, you got to be a little bit more changing of the times instead of being so rigid.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think coaching in general, but especially basketball coaches, it's about trust. It's about who you trust in the spots. And there just must have been something that, you know, no matter how hot he was, that Rick Pitino didn't trust about him being on the floor in those moments. But I agree with you. You know, you're going to have these masterful performances at times that you don't expect. And while that's happening, I mean, give that player the benefit of the doubt to go as far as they can and then take, not sit them and say, okay, let's see if you can create this magic later on, you know, if and when we need it. It's so fascinating. That's why I think basketball is just such the greatest game to coach, because strategically it's amazing. It's unlike anything else. You know, baseball, you're playing the same plays. You make some changes in pitching or whatever else. Football, you're pretty much playing guys until they're injured. There's nobody that, you know, all of a sudden kind of breaks out of there, although it does happen from time to time. But these are the questions that, you know, you'd love to ask. You don't get a chance to, but, you know, if he's signing a contract extension through 2030 and, you know, becoming close to the highest paid coach, I think he's probably just right behind Danny Hurley, and understandably so at this moment. He's got something going right.
Yeah, he did a lot of things right, but I think it's okay to question. I'm not saying you're sitting there, you know, ripping someone apart.
No.
I think you're just questioning the fact that you had a hot hand and you just you didn't stick with it. You know, sometimes it's a senior, sometimes it's a freshman, sometimes it's a guy that's a sophomore that just normally gets 6 minutes a game for you. And it doesn't mean you keep them in for 10 straight minutes, but you can't go 16 minutes without putting a guy in that's hit four threes for you, especially in a game where you're going to need that size.
And then ask them to come in super late and do something.
Yeah, with 30 seconds to go at that point, I think it's tough. The second part that has been coming up is Duke getting a lot of the officiating. Played Siena, and at some point, I think, Mike, the fouls were something like 14-3. It finished up, I think, 16-10. Siena didn't take the ball to the basket much. They were playing outside, shooting out of their minds, owned the game. They were up 11 at the half, which shows me that Duke has a chance to be beaten by somebody. TCU, the fouls were 19-15. You know, you got to give some of that. You know, Jamie Dixon was just totally outcoached, and I think he was, you know, trying to hang on to every bit, every moment there. And then the next game, 20-13, and then this last game was 17-16, in the UConn. But I think that, you know, in a certain situation, Duke is going to get that extra call.
Mm-hmm.
Does John Shire deserve it at this point in his career? I don't know. But the kids play hard,
right,
and the reputation follows them. Are they getting a couple extra calls here or there? I would say so. I think that for the most part, they're going to get a couple of extra calls going to the basket, and I think they're getting away with a couple of extra contacts underneath the basket.
Right.
Is it the reason why they win? I don't think so. I really don't think
so.
No,
I agree with you, too. Plus, you know, they're the type of team with Cameron Buzza. They play inside out a lot, or even, you know, perimeter, but with him with the ball and then diving down. So when teams are switching out, they do. They attack the rim, and they know how to draw fouls. I mean, it's, you know, I think that's kind of forgotten in some of these things. They'll pick up two or three extra fouls on getting someone in the air and kind of jumping into them or leaning. They're smart kids, and they're coached smartly. Not that UConn, you know, is not coached silly. I mean, they're on a whole nother level, I think, in terms of just as Tony Bazzella mentioned, just they're never give up.
Yeah.
And just they, no matter what the score is, they're just coming at you.
I think the men's game is more susceptible to having a team come back from down 20 than the women's game, because I think at some point, if a team is that much better, they're just going to run away with it.
Yeah.
But there's a team out there who I think is dominating once they go up, and that's Michigan. You know, once they see that they can just, you know, choke you in the throat and hold you down, they're gonna come after you. And I think if they have a bad shooting night, that's when the other team has to have their best shooting night. And that might happen in the next round, but I will say the cream is rising to the top in the men's game. I thought that Duke should have been in the Final Four. You know, let's be honest, they threw the ball away today, didn't need to advance the ball over midcourt up two with 10 seconds to go. And, you know, some of the young mistakes happened, and now you're going to have a Final Four that includes two ones, a three, and a two.
Yeah.
But I think it should be a fun. I think people are going to be glued to the TV to watch Michigan against Arizona. I think it's a great situation where either Michigan can rise up and Dustin May be the new up-and-coming coach, or possibly for the first time since 1999, a team west of the Mississippi River wins the NCAA tournament.
That's crazy. That's an unbelievable stat. I had seen that the other day, and it makes no sense. But it is. It's going to be a great Final Four, and it always is. And as we said before, it's the preeminent sports tournament, whatever you want to say. I mean, the Super Bowl is great. Seven-game series are wonderful. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, but there's nothing like a Final Four, because it just, like we saw today at the end of the UConn game, anything can happen, and it can go from heartbreak to just sheer joy in a 30-foot jumper, and who knows. Just to switch gears here a little bit, we started to talk some Mets before Tony came on, and we spoke about, you know, the challenges of getting into Citi Field this year, and with all the changes that they're having done there, and it's ultimately going to be really nice. If you're a casino person, you're going to be thrilled. If you're not a casino person, well, that's understandable as well. But the area there, you're not going to deny, because if you go around, going to Atlanta, where they have that Battery, which is just blocks of housing and restaurants and bars, it's all about the team. It's all about the experience. And you know, great for that. The Mets don't have that. Yankee Stadium has, you know, in a very different way.
Very different.
Yeah, very different. But they have the restaurants and the bars that have been there forever. And it's just a different vibe. Citi Field doesn't have that. And, you know, hopefully before I'm in the great beyond, I can experience that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it'll be the final straw when it's all said and done. It'll be a nice ballpark. You just hope that the ballpark stands up by that point and it's doing its job. You know, obviously casinos bring certain clientele in there, and you know, could be some good and some bad. They're going to have to build hotels. You're going to have a soccer stadium that's actually coming up pretty close. You could see that thing start to develop.
They put the final beam in place today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that should be cool. That should be really good. You know what?
The parking though is just going to be really tough.
Yeah, I mean
traffic.
I guess, you know, the train is the way to go if you can do it, and there are a variety of ways to do it. So, you know, that's That would be our take on that. Team-wise?
Product on the field.
Well, I got to ask you a quick question before we get to kind of the – this is more of like the salacious angle here. So it's opening day, and they have made a bunch of changes, and Juan Soto is introduced, and he comes out, and he gives Bichette a hug, he goes to Francisco Lindor, a little pound, and then he goes to Carson Benz and hugs. So there's all these things, they don't like each other, and they couldn't get rid of Lindor and all that. You buy any of that?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
I do, too.
But I think winning cures all that stuff.
Yeah.
And last year there wasn't the winning, so what do you then look upon? You look upon the fact that there's problems in the clubhouse, that these guys aren't all best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, Sterling Marte can be friends with Juan Soto and they're still happy. Luis Robert Jr. can work in the offseason with Soto,
yeah,
and he can hang out. It doesn't have to be that every guy hangs out every single night. Jeff McNeil doesn't have to be best friends with Lindor. Okay, we got rid of some of that,
yeah,
bad meat, so to speak, and it's going to be what it is.
2 years ago, the team was so tight and just was a team of destiny and Homer, and they just looked, with the ONG and all that, and
yeah,
they just had fun.
Correct.
Last year, it looked pained.
Yeah,
it looked kind of,
too much of a job.
Yeah, and it just looked like when there were these, there weren't a lot of comebacks late.
Well, let's be honest, Mike. Literally, there were no walk-offs at home. So therefore, this team's not coming back when they're down. So to have that early on, I think, is good. Should they have lost yesterday's game? Probably, and they came back to win. Should they have won today? Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I already have an issue with the third base coach. If you're going to send them every time.
Yeah.
But you can't in a situation where the tying run is going to be at third base and the winning run is going to be at second base with nobody out, send a guy who is going to be out on a bang-bang play. It's just not worth it with
no.
the middle of your lineup coming up. And you wind up getting pretty much two sacrifice flies. Is it going to play out that way? I don't know. But I think you got to put people in the right situations. And I think a quick conversation between Mendoza and the third base coach needs to happen. You need to make sure that everybody's on the right page.
Yes.
So when you're in these tight situations, you're not put in a bad one.
Because basically the entire coaching staff, for the most part,
they're all new.
They're all new guys, yeah. So they should. I mean, I love Mendoza in terms of he never really gets on anybody. He's very player friendly. He's good
sure.
with the staff. But there's got to be a time maybe from every now and again where he says, yeah, that was a bad decision.
And the Mets have to start winning these close games. You can't get into the situation that you were in last year,
no.
where now it's like we can't come back at the end of games.
Because that gets in your head.
Yeah, and if you start winning those games, it starts getting in your head the right way. And the Mets have to stay out of these extra inning games because they don't have a good enough bullpen at this point. You had to put in Sean Manaea today, who's eventually going to be a starter for them. You've used Richard Lovelady twice now. I mean, at some point, you got to go out and find yourself a better net. You don't need three lefties in the bullpen, and you don't need all these extra arms that are not going to help you. It's good to see guys like Jonah Tong at AAA, pitching okay.
Yeah,
I
think he had a great first
four
start.
Four innings, nothing across the board, which I think is good. But, Mike, the bottom line, the bats have to come through. And Bobichette already got booed today for striking out eight times in a three-game homestand.
Yeah, and in fact, I believe he didn't strike out eight times last year until the 15th game of the season.
Oh, yeah. He was brought in for RISP, and he's not doing that.
Which is strange because I'm a huge fan of his. I think it was a great pickup, when they had to kind of pivot a little bit. And he's a professional hitter. I mean, that's what he does. And to struggle so much at the beginning of the year, someone said, oh, is he worried about his defense? These are professionals. I mean, is that going to be on his mind while he's at the plate? Is he not giving enough time to hitting? I mean, I don't know.
I hope he's able to turn the switch from defense to offense
because
his defense is not going to be great, and Polanco's defense is not going to be great. He's got to come off the bag for Bichette's throws. That's not going to be a good thing. Brett Beatty's going to play there at least once a week. Tyrone Taylor's going to play at least twice a week in center field or right field. So you're going to get these guys in the game. Everybody's going to get a shot. I think the Mets need to go into St. Louis, sweep them, kind of let St. Louis know that they're not a team to be, anywhere near the playoffs this year, and turn the page and just come back home, with a positive attitude. And I think that's what they need. You can't start the year off on a bad note so that when these bumps in the road do happen, you know that you have guys that can step up for you.
What do they do with Mark Vientos?
he has to have 2 good weeks and then trade him.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to have a two-week good. What's his role right now?
There is none.
You're not putting him at first base.
No.
There aren't many lefties out there that he's going to face. You know, when there is a lefty, you can have him be the DH.
Does he have any options left?
No, that's why he's on the team. Yeah. And that's why Ronnie Mauricio is not on the team, because he did have an option left.
Yeah.
So I think that's the whole reason why. That's the reason why Acuna is gone, is because Acuna had no options left.
Right.
They got to a point where these guys either needed to be on the team or they needed to go. And I think they probably tried to trade some of these guys and didn't get anything for them, so now they're kind of stuck.
And just to switch quickly before we're done tonight to the Yankees, you know, we had Dave Sims on 2 weeks ago, and you know, he was pretty calm, cool, and collected about the Yankees.
Right.
Or the Yankees, and he is right. I mean, they're just too talented and just too focused, I think. They went out, and I don't know if San Francisco is going to be a good team, great team, bad team this year, but the Yankees just stomped on them.
To me, it was the pitching, because Logan Webb had one bad inning, and I think anybody that pitched in the World Baseball Classic didn't come out dominant.
Right.
You know, you can look at Paul Skenes, you can look at Logan Webb, you can look at Nolan McClain, you can look at any of these guys that were starters. They didn't come back throwing strikes and, you know, mowing through everybody. So I think the Yankees took advantage of good pitching and put themselves in a good spot, and I think the Yankees are going to be one of the best teams in the American League.
I was flabbergasted by Sports Illustrated picked them to be fourth.
Ugh.
Fourth in the division.
No.
What? Fourth?
You're running back a team with a couple extra additions that won, you know, the second most games in Major League Baseball. So they're going to be very good. Mike, I got one last thing before we finish.
Go right ahead.
Tiger Woods.
Oh, man.
He is leaning on everyone just bowing down to what he did on the golf course. Off the golf course, Tiger Woods is not a good person. He's done a lot of things wrong.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Go hire yourself a driver. You know, when somebody drops you off at home, don't get back in the car if you've had too many, you know, muscle relaxers or painkillers or, you know, because obviously they're saying it wasn't drinking. But his time is done as being the good guy that can play golf. Probably the second best golfer ever.
Sure.
When healthy.
Yeah, I mean.
But these situations is going to happen time after time after time unless he gets himself some help.
And it's all about whoever's in his inner circle, he's enabled. And because he's been the athlete that he's been. Yeah, you're right. Everybody bows
down. Jim Nance bows down to him. And, you know, everybody in the media.
It's got to become about him, the person, because it's not going to end well.
And I'm glad the cops are not trying to, you know, I know he flips his car over, but the next time that he gets pulled over for something that he shouldn't be doing, he needs to be arrested.
Yeah.
Because he really is living on borrowed time. And the next time it happens, Mike, someone's going to be injured.
Well,
he's very lucky.
Yeah, he is very lucky, and thank God it's not somebody else, because if that happens, then, or himself, that's a true tragedy, and you don't want to see that happen to anybody, but especially someone, you know, who's been in the public eye and been such a dominant athlete over the years.
Somebody hopefully will step in and be that person for him, but I don't think, here's the thing, I don't think he listens to those people.
No, I don't.
He goes by the beat of his own drum, and that's the reason why I ranted tonight.
Well, it's a great rant, and hopefully, somewhere someone gets through to him. Great show. Thanks again to Coach Tony Bozzella from Seton Hall University. Thanks to Brian Graves behind the glass. A little different for us this week, just one caller. We got to talk. It was wonderful. We'll see you in 2 weeks. You know, enjoy the baseball. There's going to be a little warmer weather before we hit the cold again.
We'll see.
All right. Take care, everybody.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.